Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Well, hello, and welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show. I'm your host, Cecile B. Real, and we have a wonderful show today. My guest is Dr. Patty Rose, and our topic is health disparities, diversity and inclusion, and a part of that has to do with context, controversies, and solutions. Dr. Rose, how are you this wonderful day? It's so wonderful to have you.
Oh, I'm wonderful, and it's so nice to be with you. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yes, because, let's see, you do a lot of things, and I know you're president and CEO and author and consultant of Rose Consulting, and I think it's wonderful. And that's what we're kind of going to talk about is, despite the many public health successes over the last century, health disparity continues to exist in American society. And you're going to be talking about this and exploring some of the steps. And so, despite the many things that are going on, why did you choose to write about health disparities and diversity for your newest book? And for those of you who are listening, she'll probably be able to talk to you a bit about not only the book, but show a way that you might be able to purchase it. So where you go with, despite the many public health successes over the last century, talk about health disparity and why it continues to exist in our society.
Okay, that's such a wonderful way to begin this dialogue, because it takes me back a little bit. I began the exploration of health disparities actually as a graduate student. I was studying public health at Yale University, and at that time, I learned, this was in the 80s, in the mid-80s, and I learned at that time that there was a gap between the health status of Black and white people in the United States. So initially, my focus was to try and understand why that was the case. And that started my foray into this area, subsequently leading to the writing of this book. So some of the issues that I found was that it wasn't just a matter of people being sick because of genetics or something to that effect. That was inaccurate. It had to do more with very key factors that were leading to the problem. So I decided, although I had written during the course of this endeavor into health disparities, other books, one about cultural competency for the health professions and others, another book on public health and cultural competency. The book that I really wanted to write and delve into is this one. So everything else was sort of a buildup to getting to this book, hence the title, Health Disparities, Diversity, and Inclusion. So I not only cover health disparities, which is the key topic of the book, but also the issue of diversity, which happens to be one of the factors that contributes to health disparities and inclusion. And I wanted it to be a book about solutions, not just identifying the problems. So that is how I ventured into this.
Sure. And when we talk about health disparities, can you kind of define what that means before we get into, say, the key factors? Because some of our listeners may not know what that is.
Yes, that's important. Health disparities refers to the gap in the health status between the majority population in the United States and now more broadly people of color. So in our society, white people in the U.S. based on socioeconomic status, which is a very, very important aspect of this, are healthier than people of color. Again, based on socioeconomic status. So that is clearly the definition of health disparity.
Okay, and when you were writing this book, obviously you just were mentioning that you were looking at those health disparities as well as the diversity. And
yes.
So knowing that are the questions then for me specifically are the key factors. Where does that begin?
Yes. So the key factors associated with health disparities are socioeconomic status, that's number one, so that people who are poor do not have the same quality of health as people who have more money. So that seems a little bit obvious, but it's an important point because initially the thought was that, well, perhaps it's genetics. And my goal was to really explore that because that is not accurate. Because if we take the black population as an example, black people are descendants in the United States from West Africa. And so
right.
If you look at the health issues associated with West African people as compared to black people in the United States, they're not the same. So that kind of helps us to rule out the genetic issues. So the next question is, what are the factors? Social injustice would be another factor. And that factor requires a breakdown, a very specific breakdown. So some of the issues under social injustice are food injustice, meaning that in lower income communities, which are largely people of color, there isn't access to good quality food. There aren't good quality supermarkets with produce and non-processed foods and things of that effect. We also have the issue of soul food as an example. So black people in the United States eat something called soul food. It started out largely with black people. Why? Because this was the refuse food that was provided to the slaves. And so pig feet, pig knuckles, pig tails, you know, all of the poor quality aspects of meat, the coarser vegetables, and et cetera. And so the ingestion of that food over a long period of time from one generation to another that is highly seasoned and fried and so forth was also a contributing factor. That food is not culture, but it was rather an imposition that was imposed on individuals who came here as slaves, and then that diet was perpetuated. And other factors, educational disparities. So if you are poor, your educational scenario is not the same as people who live in communities that are more wealthy, where there's more money. So consequently, this leads to the diversity issue because then we don't get the adequate number of individuals studying the health profession, science, and et cetera. So I'm merely giving you examples at this moment, but my book is replete with examples, and hopefully we'll get into one more as we go on because it has to do with mass incarceration, which
sure.
is severely contributing.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions that comes up for me at least, and perhaps some of our listeners, is when we're talking about this and particularly looking at black individuals and so on, what happens or how do you work with, say, a company that may or may not be aware of all these things because some of the people maybe don't have homes, whereas others might be and have a job working. So how do we balance that out? Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Well, are you speaking in terms of, for example, diet?
Yes.
So with companies, the kind of companies that I generally would work with would be healthcare corporations or educational institutions and even individuals. And I think your question is so pertinent and such an excellent one because the place where you have to begin is informing individuals of the very question that you asked, what are the factors associated with this, and then how do we rectify those factors? So it begins
yes.
with knowledge. Yes. Yes, it
begins
with the provision knowledge. Of
knowledge.
Yes.
Okay. And so because the people who are calling in work for companies, I'm assuming most of them do, where does this begin in the workplace? How is that handled, the various factors?
The first step, I believe, in dealing with an organization, let's focus on a health organization, for example, a hospital or a community health center or something to that effect. My belief is that you have to begin with the board of directors. You have to start at the top because the board of directors need to understand, as well as the president and CEO, and then every level of the organization must be aware of these issues. So as a consultant, I have been hired to come into organizations, particularly healthcare organizations, and do a total assessment, starting with an attitudinal assessment to find out where people are on these issues, and then move beyond with the provision of knowledge to the entire organization. And I think what happens sometimes is we tend to leave off the board and the president and CEO and some of the higher level administrators because we feel they already know these things. But in reality, this is where we need to first gain support and understanding of the issues so that solutions can be implemented within the context of the organization.
Absolutely. And when it comes to, like, diversity and inclusion, because that's what we're talking about within a company, where is it today and what are some of the issues in terms of diversity, particularly as it's related to health disparities?
Well, unfortunately, the problem continues. There have been some improvements, so I'll try to go over that as succinctly as possible. First of all, it begins with education. We need to have more individuals, for example, in terms of the health professions, who are hired to diversify the organization. And so in order to get that to happen, individuals have to be educated in the sciences and in the health professions and beyond. And so you need a pool of applicants, and that is beginning to happen. But the problem is that organizations have to hire individuals of color within their organization in an effort to diversify. And that's where organizations are falling short. So we're still in a very precarious situation with that because the importance of doing so has to be at the core of doing it. So some organizations are not fully understanding that if you're going to serve people of color, particularly in terms of healthcare, then you need employees in the organization that reflect them. You need to address cultural nuances. You need to ensure that you understand the various cultures that you are dealing with and so forth. So accrediting bodies for healthcare organizations such as the Joint Commission for the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations and others are beginning to incorporate requirements for diversifying in order to receive accreditation. And I think that this is helping the situation, but we still have a very long way to go around it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true, and I've dealt with issues like that myself in companies.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is trying to get all of these ethnicities together.
Yes.
And learn about the diversity and inclusion or other things. And, you know, so often, unfortunately, it can be missed. And
yes.
You know, and there are those who are saying, well, or there are also employees who may be have various ethnicities and their families have an issue because, you know, their parents and so on don't necessarily come into the workplace. And there's a concern that perhaps, although employees are doing well, their families and others aren't doing well.
Right. Well, I think that from an organizational vantage point, what we are dealing with largely in America, although not exclusively, so I have to be very careful to make sure that I'm not generalizing across the board in regard to all organizations. But
sure.
The problem still exists with some organizations in that, for example, if we look at higher education, we still have this term that is a prevalent term, which I refer to in my book, which is predominantly white institutions known as PWIs. And, you know, there's lots of literature about them and so forth within the context of higher education. And so I think that you still have a very small number of people of color in some of these institutions, and that creates all kinds of issues. And so when I speak to a university, what I'm trying to get them to understand is that the organization has to be diversified, not just the students, but the faculty, the administration, the board of trustees, and et cetera. And once you can have that happen, then it's much better in terms of working with the people that you're going to serve, whether it would be your students or in a healthcare organization, your clients, patients, et cetera, and their families. So we can break down all of these barriers and really work together if we understand that diversity matters. It absolutely matters. And I think that's where some organizations are falling short.
Yes, and it definitely matters. And often people don't take the time to really look at this and see what they need to do in order to bring it about. What I want to do for a few minutes right now is I'd like you to, if you will, to let those who are listening know how they might contact you, whether it's your email or your phone number or a web address. So would you take a moment to let them know how they can reach you?
Oh, absolutely. So the easiest way to reach me if you want to speak with me directly is through my email, which is Dr. Patty Rose. That's DrPattiRose at yahoo.com. My book can be acquired at jblearning.com. And on that website, you can just search my name, Patty Rose, with an I, and you will find that particular book, this newest one, Health Disparities, Diversity, and Inclusion, and also my other books. And I'm also on Twitter. My Twitter handle is naturalistcool. I'm a Huffington Post contributor, so if you Google my name with Huffington Post, you will find all of my articles there. Some of them are about diversity. And I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram with the name Patty Rose. And I have a blog which is entitled naturalistcoolenough.blogspot.com. So those are all of the various places to reach me.
Well, that would be great, and I hope those of you who are listening will take the time or have the time to contact her and then look through all the various things that she just discussed. So when we look at those key factors and all those kinds of things, then what are some solutions to, because you, in your title you talk about solutions, so what are some of the solutions to all of these issues? What's going on today? You know, where are companies today? What should they be doing?
Correct. So, first of all, again, we begin with diversity. The solutions begin in the very early stages of education. And so pipeline programs, positive pipeline programs, that can lead individuals into the sciences and into the healthcare fields and et cetera, or whatever it is that your organization is focusing on. You want to try to reach individuals early and have pipeline programs that will feed them right into these arenas where there is lack of diversity. And so that is number one in terms of this particular issue. I think that helps tremendously, and there's some excellent examples of this in my book. Introducing students of color to science, medicine, math, STEM, essentially, science, technology, engineering, math, and I also feel the arts should always remain there. In terms of health disparities, negative pipelines, such as the school-to-prison pipeline, has to be ended. So, for example, instead of children being educated in school and disciplined accordingly for behaviors that are inappropriate, oftentimes young children are being arrested and then they get into the system. So that is the mass incarceration that I was referring to earlier, which is a very, very big issue today that is interfering with the pool of individuals that are available for diversification. So we need to stop those kind of things and resolve food justice and resolve educational injustice, all of these issues. So the solutions sound grandiose, but if you take them one by one, bit by bit, and deal with them, they can be managed and handled to resolve some of these issues.
And when you're working with companies, what are they most concerned about as it relates to their employees?
I think the big concern has to do with this confusion between the term diversity and cultural competence. So if we look at this issue, oftentimes what I find with organizations is that they will set up a diversity program and they will say, well, we're doing everything we can to diversify. And even in those instances where they are bringing in individuals of color to work in the organizations, once they get there, the cultural competency is missing. People realize that they don't really have the skill set to deal with the changing demographics that are occurring in the communities that they're serving. So I think one of the big issues that I find is the understanding that diversification and cultural competency are two separate issues that you have to provide people with the adequate skill sets once you have diversified, and then you have to focus on the core problems, which are health disparities when we're looking at health issues.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I know, too, because I do work with diversity and inclusion and those kinds of things. So many times, companies don't even want to address it. And I think sometimes the reasons they don't want to address it is they don't know what they're going to have to do to deal with it.
Correct. Yes. And I think that it often has to do with bottom line. I mean, we don't want to leave that out because from a business vantage point, one of the key questions that an organization might have, especially at the executive level and the board of director level and et cetera, they want to know, well, how much is this going to cost?
Yes.
You know, what
yes.
is the bottom line on this? And so in my prior books on cultural competency, I have very specific sections that deal with the business aspect of diversification and cultural competency and all of these issues, because it is actually better for your business, because the demographics are changing so rapidly in the United States, and by 2042, some say 2050, the term minority will be obsolete. I don't even use the term minority in my book. I use the term emerging majority.
Yeah, I don't
and
use
so
that
if
term
that
either.
Right, and if that is going to be your primary demographic, this variation, this diverse group of people, then it benefits your organization and your organization's bottom line to get prepared to ramp up, to diversify, and give your staff at every level the skill set to deal with various cultures. So it's actually, you know, if we look at it from a business vantage point, it makes sense. And then from a humanistic vantage point, it makes sense. There's very few areas where you can say, well, why would we do such a thing?
Yeah, you're right. And what often happens is that whether we're talking about a board of directors or whoever, it still comes back to, do we really want to deal with this issue?
Right.
And so many of the companies, they either don't want to or they're afraid to. And I think the fear comes in faster than anything else. What do you think?
Well, I think that fear is a factor because the unknown for some is always creates a possibility of fear. But when you think about the fact that you want to provide efficacious care to everyone that you serve, that your goal, that what makes your organization work is that you are doing what you do well, that you are optimizing all of your efforts within your organization. And so if you are missing a key aspect of what it needs to serve people well, and that is to diversify your organization, to make sure that your clients feel comfortable within the context of your organization, and to resolve their issues so that there isn't this burgeoning gap that has existed for so long, then you owe it to your organization and to the people that you serve to relinquish that fear and get about the business of doing your work at an optimal level. And so this is about optimizing organizations so that communities can be served at an optimal level regardless of their diverse backgrounds. And so, again, diversity matters.
Yeah, it does matter. And then when you look at the people who, say, don't have a position in a company, but they live off the street, how do we help people that don't have a place to live?
Well, not having a place to live is one of the issues or factors that contributes to health disparities.
Yep.
So if you go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I don't know if you remember that from we all learned
days,
right?
Yes.
So in terms of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, there are certain things that individuals must have in order to function in this society. And, of course, one of those is housing. Our physiological needs have to be met. And so this is where outreach comes into play. We cannot expect everyone to walk into our organizations to be served. We have to go out to them. And I think that this is where organizations such as community health centers, which are underutilized, by the way, because many people don't know that they are in place to serve individuals regardless of their ability to pay or their immigration status. And so if you have a homeless person that is on the street that is in need of health care, and you are a healthcare organization, it is part of your task or your responsibility to make sure that the needs of the people in the community where you're providing services are met.
Yes, and that is so important because it seems more and more, we see more people living in the streets, per se, that don't know what to do. Many of them don't have the mentality. Others may just, they don't have any money, and they walk around sometimes panhandling because they don't have anything. And yet it seems, in when you think about it, and the people I see many times is nobody's helping them. Nobody's showing them the way to get out of the streets and into a home and or a company.
Yes, well, this, again, is part of community outreach.
Yep.
So organizations have to not only work within, but they have to go without the or outside of the organization. They have to step outside of the building and go and find individuals and make sure that their needs are met. So this is community outreach, which is a big part of what I have done in terms of my own work. For example, when I was the president and CEO of a community health center, as well as vice president of a community health center, a lot of our work was, in fact, community outreach, in which individuals would have to go out and find out what's actually happening in the community, provide health fairs, invite individuals to those events, seek them out, let them know what was available, because oftentimes people don't know what's available to them in order to get services. And without that knowledge, again, this is another contributing factor to health disparities. It begins with so much knowledge and provision of information. I think that's such a wonderful place to start.
Yes. Well, this has been wonderful, and we're down to our last couple minutes. But, you know, if you could once again let those that are listening know what your email address is, if that's where you want them to contact you, then would you mention that again?
Yes, my email address is Dr. Patty Rose, that's DrPattiRose at yahoo.com. And again, to acquire the book, which has all of the information that I'm talking about, jblearning.com, and simply search my name, which is Patty Rose, PattiRose.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being a part of this morning. And for those of you who've called in, please take an opportunity to look at what she's been proposing as well as to perhaps look at her book. So, Dr. Patty Rose, thank you so much for being here. And I hope you have a wonderfully blessed week. And those of you who called in, I hope the same for you.
It has been my absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.